This is Leslie Kane, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Straight on and get into listener questions. Grant, so from Nikki. Nikki asks, I love to know what Grant's thoughts are as to whether non-human intelligence is extraterrestrial or interdimensional, and what is Grant's interpretation of the term interdimensional?
That's where we get to the what's actually going on. I maintain that it's not extraterrestrial. It is something way more complex than extraterrestrial. That's where I say this whole thing about 1896. Do you actually believe that these guys came from Mars on wooden ships? Come on. This is like, come on. It's not. And I've interviewed a lot. And I start, like, when I talk to experiencers, they have the being. And the first thing I say to them is, what's the name of the being you're dealing with? And there's always one being they're dealing with. One being. It's like, it's got a name. It's got an English name. And then you're going like, is that really an alien? Why are they only talking to one being? And then Jim Semivan sort of gives it away. Jim Semivan says, this is happened after the UFO Sky Pilots book. So Jim Semivan's in an interview, and you probably heard the interview with the first interview that James Ian Dolly did with him. He's trying to get him to talk about his experience of these beings in the room. And Jim doesn't want to talk about it. And they're working on this, they're still investigating. And James is getting kind of frustrated. So he one more question before we leave. He says, was there any telepathy involved? And then Jim Semivan says, yeah, that was the weirdest part. He says, these beings are there. And he says, and there's a being behind me. I don't know if it's a gray or a reptilian or a tall white, but it had this guardian type thing going on about it. And I go, guardian type thing? And I said to James, go back and ask him, is it on the left side or right side? Because if you read Michael Newton, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, you'll realize that people, when they leave the world, according to these 7,000 people that he regressed, say you go in front of this council between 3 and 12 people, and there's your guardian angel stands behind you on the left side. So I'm going like, this is weird. I mean, it's got this guardian type thing going on about it. Is it an alien or is it a guardian angel? And this whole thing's a play. All the world's a stage. All the men and women are but actors. So then I'm thinking, oh, that's what David said. So I go back and I'm thinking, David is in the Sky Pilot book. He's a U.S. Air Force retired colonel in San Francisco in the Orange County group. And he came after we were in the restaurant. He didn't hear my lecture. And they said, David, tell Grant about your story. Tell him about your experience flying the craft. And then David says to me, oh, I think it was a dream. I said, everybody thinks it's a dream. Tell me your story. And he told me he flew F-16s, combat in Iraq and all this sort of stuff. And he says, I'm standing in the craft. I find myself standing in the craft and there's somebody behind me that's talking. I don't know if it's aliens. I don't know if it's humans. And they're saying, okay, go ahead and do it. And he says, I don't know what to do. And the voice behind him says, you know what to do. Just go and do it. And he puts his hands on the panel and he starts flying the craft and the rest is history. So I'm thinking, hey, and then I remember another person talking about somebody being behind them. Peter Kinsella from Great Britain, he tells this story about the beings. He's not allowed to turn around and look. And there's somebody behind him and he's telling them what to do. So then I go to Whitley. So I go to Whitley Strieber and I say, hey, Whitley, you're on the craft, right? He says, Whitley, do you ever have anybody standing behind you on the craft that's telling you what to do? And he goes, all the time. He says, in fact, when I was going to steal the craft, I'm looking at the craft, I'm sitting at the panel board, and I says, yeah, I'd like to steal this thing. And telepathically, you hear somebody laughing behind him. And it's this whole deal. This, what are we really dealing with here? Are we dealing with aliens? Or are we dealing with something else? And basically, I think it comes down to is the idea that all the world's a stage. All the men and women are but actors. If you've interviewed Yossi Ronan, the experiencer out of Israel, the beings that he deals with are like grays, but they're green beings. And I maintain that all the beings are going to be different. I'm giving a lecture. I'm going to show all the grays. I'm going to show like 30 grays. I'll take Whitley Strieber's gray, put it against Betty Hill's gray and Betty Andreas. And I'll say, do you think these look the same? Boom, 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 grays. They all look different. They're all different. Everybody assumes it's the same thing. And you start to realize all the phenomena is different. And they're taking on, as Yossi Ronan says, he was told, when we come into your world, we take on a body. We need a body to work in your world, but we don't need a body. You can do the same thing. You don't know it. Or you take Sherry Wilde. Sherry Wilde wrote The Forgotten Promise, one of the most famous best-selling books on the phenomena. She's there and her daughter's trying to stop her from publishing it. The publisher says, Sherry, you said this thing is an extraterrestrial. And he says, Zeta, right? She says, yeah, he's a Zeta. His name is Da. And he said, well, he says from Andromeda. Yeah, he's from Andromeda. She says, well, he can't be from Andromeda. If he's a Zeta, if you say he's a Zeta, he's from Zeta Reticuli. And she says, oh, really? She didn't know. She goes, really? And he says, well, go back and ask him. So she goes, and Da comes, and she says, so what's going on? Are you actually an alien? And he, quote, this is what Da says. No, that would not best describe who I actually am. I am an etheric being on a mission in the cosmos for the creator. And then she says, well, why do you come as this gray thing? Why do you have this gray body on? And then he says, well, that's more functional than a human body. It's easier. The human body is very delicate. And he goes through that. So I start asking. I asked Nancy Tremaine, who was abducted 2 months. Her and her friend were abducted 2 months before Betty and Barney Hill. I said, did you ask him if he's an alien? And she calls him Mr. And he says, I asked him. And he said, I'm neither alien to this planet or any other planet. I've always been here. Then I interview the beings. If you know the being story from Great Britain, from London, I interview them. And of course, what's the first question I ask? Are you an alien? And they go, would you like us to be an alien? We could do that if you want. But no, we're not aliens. We've always been here. You're the visitor. And it's this whole thing. It's a game. They can take on this whatever body they want. And they are, everything's an etheric being. Same as Chris Bledsoe. If you see Chris Bledsoe, when he first saw the beings, they were tall. They were 7 feet tall. They were bluish green. And he said, in the ship, if you saw the light in the ship, they looked brown by the different type of light, depending what light. And when they come in 2012, when I have my download experience, a couple of weeks later, he has this experience with the lady in light. So is the lady in light an extraterrestrial? And he has that experience. Then when they come, they are no longer gray, these tall 7 foot beings. Now they're etheric beings. They're energy beings inside with hoods, and they got the hoods on. And same as Nancy Tremaine. When Nancy Tremaine, I helped her write her two books, her books, and it's all about reptilians. And so I said, Nancy, so when you were on the ship, was he a reptilian? She goes, no. I said, well, what was he? It was a human being. He was sitting at a council. So I says, well, is he a reptilian now? Well, no. Now he's just like an etheric being. He talks to me when I'm talking. So you see the beings are changing with different people. And it's this whole thing. All the world's a stage. All the men and women are but actors. They are playing roles. They're coming in to act as roles. We can do the same thing. Or if you hear the story, I just confirmed it with Mike Cloland. So Mike Cloland is a top guy. He has this experience when he's in Utah. If you know the story, he's on the side of a road. He's sleeping. He wakes up. He sees this UFO on top of the hill. He says, hey, it looks like a UFO on top of the hill with the lights all around it. And then he goes back to sleep again. And then he wakes up and he's out of his body. He's etheric. He's out of his body. He's above the craft and he goes into the craft. And I said, what's the thing with the thing on the hook? And he said, I'm not really sure how that happened. He said, but it was like there was a gray suit, a rubber suit hanging from a hook. And I went into it like that. And he said, I'm a gray. And he says, I'm looking at myself. And he says, holy cow, I'm a gray. And he's looking at his hands. And Mike Clown's a tall guy. And he's there. And the beings are beside him, the two grays. And he said, I'm the same size as the grays. I got to look at my hands. I'm a gray. And then he meets in front of this council. And that's when they say, it's time. Time for what? It's time for you to get going. It's time for you to get moving. And he said, what? You volunteer for this? I volunteer for what? And they said, oh, he suddenly remembered. Oh, you never told me it was going to be like this. You never told me it was going to be this traumatic. And it was like he had made an agreement. He had come in, and basically 2 days later, he starts the Owl Books. And that was the whole thing. So it's this thing. We are etheric beings. They're etheric beings. There is no physical. If you break down the physical world, it comes down to everything is energy. There's no colors. It's all created in our heads, this whole idea. It's the nature of reality. When you look at the UFO phenomena, it's moving us towards the nature of reality. You think the world is flat. No, it's not flat. You think the sun goes around the earth. You think everything's solid. You think people are human beings with souls in them. No, that's not how it works. And the phenomena is the theory of wow. They're doing these weird things to move us down the road. Almost like they need to do it. And there's and you can go to the next question, but I want to mention this. I was raised as a Lutheran. There was a whole deal that was made about Martin Luther. Supposedly was brought into a seance. And during that thing, they asked him the question that we ask about aliens. Why don't aliens land on the White House lawn? Why don't they just announce themselves? Martin Luther was asked the same question, except why doesn't God get off his fat rear end and come down here and tell us what's going on? And this is what he said. And this sums up the whole UFO thing and the God thing. He said, because doubt is part of the equation. If the human soul were to realize the answer to everything, it would develop wings and fly away and leave the body behind. The creator is the harvester. We are the sower. And the creator is determined to keep the plow in the ground. So the whole thing, and that's what Jim Sembian, this whole thing with Jim Sembian, is that why they're not disclosing. They're forcing us to go through this, to figure this thing out for ourselves. They're not going to land on the White House. That's what we do. We come in, we say, we're here to bring you freedom, democracy, Jesus, and McDonald's. And then people are pointing guns and saying, get the heck out of our country. Who do you think you are? That's a left brain thing that we're going to give a rational, analytical explanation. They're getting us to figure this thing out. They're doing these weird things. And because this idea of doubt or awe and curiosity, until there is awe and curiosity, there is no scientific investigation. The only reason we scientifically investigate things is because something doesn't make sense. It's what Charles Fort used to call the damned facts. All these things that don't make sense, and we're trying to figure it out. That's what moves us down the road. So they're doing these weird things. They're dropping metal. I say, anybody thinks they came 1,000 light years across the universe, and then they crashed, or the pieces started falling off, or you have the Roswell pieces that you couldn't bend with a sledgehammer, and yet it hits the ground and it breaks like a wine glass dropped from the top of the Empire State Building. Come on, none of this stuff is making sense. It's these weird things. You're going, why is this going on? And that's what they're doing. They're dragging us down the road, but it's an etheric phenomenon. We're all etheric beings. You're pretending to be a human. I'm pretending to be human. They're pretending to be aliens. We all made this agreement. We're going to play this little role and we're going to play this little game. When we die, we have absolute knowledge. And I've had absolute knowledge, and UFO experiences have had it. Near-death experience people have had it. They've described this. All the answers in the field. It's all there. We come in, we go through the river of forgetfulness, and we're playing this little game. We came in through the three waves, whatever you want to cause it, to raise the consciousness of the world at this time and this being. And because we're in the space age, we come, instead of elves and leprechauns and stuff like that, now it's the space age. And if you go back, and I actually show 360 alien things quickly on a screen, I show them before the grays. The grays did not appear until 1961. Before that, you got aliens with turtleneck shirts on. You got with coveralls, with bubble helmets. What does that mean? 1940, 1950, they've got bubble helmets on. That's right out of comics from the 1940s, 1950s. They are reflecting. That's what Barbara Streisand's stepson said. He's a full-blown experiencer. He said, he was told, when we come into your world, we go into your head, we see what's in your head, and it is whatever's in your head. That's what we use to teach you a lesson. We have no other choice. So we're in the space age. So this is all space age stuff. And it progresses as we go along. It starts with the wooden ships, and then it moves to the contactees and the windows, and then the windows go away. Now we're into orbs. And it's moving according to our understanding. The phenomena is changing. And anybody that's been in as long as I know knows the phenomena has changed. It's not the same as it was, not even close to what happened in 1975. It's a completely different world.
Thanks for that answer. Peter Earnshaw sent in several questions. So, Peter, thank you as always. He says, given your extensive research into the phenomena, Grant, and the times you have uncovered attempts to conceal its existence from the general public, do you have any view on the reasons why there is such pushback on disclosure?
Well, I explained that before. I mean, it's basically, in the United States, there's only three rules. One is money. Number two is money. Number three is money. If you are in the control, if you're the what Walker called the elite group, it is an elite group. If you were in that group, I would know. So if you're the elite group and you've got all the funding and you've got all the potential and all the fear, and you got to remember, you got 400 million guns in the United States of America. That's a lot of fear. Everybody's afraid of Mexicans and Russians and Chinese, and everybody's an enemy. And the more enemies you can create, the higher your budget is. So these guys actually believe that they're saving us from all the enemies, all the perceived enemies. And that's what it's all about, is these guys are not about to shut down a $900 billion defense budget. They're not about to give the crafts back, because they may have developed some sort of technology, or they're waiting to develop a patent from the technology. It's all got to do with whoever's controlling the secret is not going to give it to us, because we're curious. Curiosity is not sufficient need to know. And the people who control the secret are not going to, and they actually believe they're saving the world. It's not like they're bad guys or whatever. They actually believe what they have. They believe that the best world is them having 16 houses and billions of dollars. It's like the old idea. If you're a one-star general, what do you think about all day long? Becoming a two-star general. If you made your first billion, what do you think about? I think about making my second billion. Everybody wants more, 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 more. That's the way the world works. And that's what it is. So they're not about into sharing, especially the United States of America. It's a capitalist system where you want to be rich. You want to get more and more and more. It's not about sharing anything. They are not going to, nobody's going to burn their Lockheed shares. Nobody's going to shut down the defense budget. They have the control of the secret and they may not figure it out yet, but they're working on it because it's worth a lot of money and it's worth a lot of power. And that's what the disclosure is all about. And the reason they're not disclosing it, if you controlled it, you would be in the same boat. There's 14 administrations who have controlled this UFO secret. And if Semivan's right, and it's the president who made the initial call, and that all the presidents know what this is about, the initial call, 14, whether and seven Republicans, seven Democrat administrations, they've all done the same thing, which means they all believe they're following the law. This thing is legal, and they believe they're saving the world. And curiosity is not sufficient need for them to change that and let you know, because they say, well, we're going to let the Russians know, the Chinese know, and they may use it to kill us. And there's a thousand different reasons they can come up with, probably, you know, books and books and books of reasons that they have presented to say there's no way this thing can be disclosed. In fact, there's even a story that Hal Puthoff tells, and Hal Puthoff's on our side. So Hal Puthoff tells a story. We need to go to the Arlington Institute. Arlington Institute, it was John Peterson. And Peterson was involved in the Bigelow Group and stuff like that. And he's a futurist. So they're looking at the future stuff. And Bigelow, he doesn't mention the Institute, but Hal Puthoff says, we go to the Institute and we say, should we have disclosure? And all the people, all these officials, I don't know who was all there. They said, yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then they start for a couple of days, they discuss it and they put the little tabs with this pros and cons. At the end of 2 days, everybody said, no, don't disclose it. So it changed. And when you look at the thing, then you start looking at, you know, technology and the Russians and stuff like that. So he said when they first went in, said, yeah, but after a couple of days, he said, everybody agreed, no, we shouldn't disclose this. And now he's on our side. He's the UFO guy. And yet he's trying to figure it out for himself. So he's trying to get funding for himself, for his zero point energy projects and stuff like that. And Ron Pandolfi talks about. Ron Pandolfi calls loons, crooks, and worse. He said all these guys are trying to get research. They ran out of billionaires to rip off, and now they're ripping off the American government because they're trying to get research for their funding. And he seems to indicate that it's got nothing to do with anti-gravity and all this kind of stuff. It's got this portal stuff, that we've got this mind technology, this being able to go through portals and stuff like that. That, so he calls it loons, crooks, and worse. And it comes down to this thing. Everybody's trying to make money. Everybody's trying to figure this thing out and advance themselves, because it's all about in the world is getting more. We want more and more and more. And even the spiritual stuff. We want some spiritual stuff. So we know that when we go to the other side, we're just going to be just as privileged as we are on this side. And so that's what a lot of the CE5 stuff is. You got very rich people paying thousands of dollars to go for a weekend. 100 years ago, we were for entertainment, instead of going for CE5s and seeing if we can see something fly through the sky, we're sitting there doing seances. We're talking to dead people, bringing somebody else, let's talk to some dead people. And again, it comes down to this idea that for a lot of it's just simple entertainment, where people just want to know, they're bored and they want to know. And that's why it's so effective to do stuff on Netflix for documentary people, because that's what people do. They're bored and they go on Netflix and they go, oh, this UFO thing, that's crazy, I don't believe in UFOs, I'll watch this stupid thing. And they don't realize they're being subconsciously programmed. And it's those people, I think, that are shifting the zeitgeist. They're changing the idea, because people are indirectly watching this stuff and they don't realize that their mind is being changed by watching these documentaries on whatever it is, Netflix or whatever.
A follow-up question from Peter. He asks, how likely do you think it is that non-human intelligence will just show up and force a disclosure issue, perhaps a massive flap of clearly visible and unarguable sightings?
Never. It's not, that's what I said, it's not what they're doing. They absolutely will not do that. The plow has to stay in the ground. The awe and curiosity, they want you to stay in, they want you to figure it out. It's if you give the answer, because we all know the answers. This is the thing. Before you come into the world, you know the answer to everything. You go through the river of forgetfulness to come in here and pretend you don't know anything and learn. If you know all the answers, as Martin Luther said, the soul will develop wings and fly away. And so that's what they're doing. They're forcing us through these weird things that they're doing. Because when the second night I saw the UFO, I'm going, that is unreal. That could be like an extraterrestrial as it's flying away. And it's just slowly flying away. And then I'm going, what's it doing? It's not doing anything. And then I will ask people in every UFO sighting, I say, like Bud Hopkins. Bud Hopkins, 1964, when he sees the UFO over the car and is hovering, and he's got these English people in the car and he's driving and he's looking up at this flying saucer in the middle of the day and he's looking at this thing and it's just sitting there. It's not doing anything. So when people have UFO sightings, they say, hey, Andy, what was it doing? And they go, wasn't doing anything. Well, are you sure? No, it wasn't. Do you think it saw you? Yeah. Do you think it knew you saw it? Yeah. And it's like, what is it doing? It's waking you up. It's like the theory of WOW says, if you're on another planet and you want to wake these people up on the planet, you say, what are we going to do? The grade one class says, hey, let's put lights on UFOs and let's fly them around. Why do UFOs have lights on them? They have lights on them so you can see them. They want you to see them, but they're not going to tell you what it is. Everybody goes, what? And it's forming a triangle in the sky. I've got a lot of videos. The UFOs forming a triangle in the sky. So why does they come out 100,000 light years to put a triangle in the sky? What's it doing? It's getting you to go, wow, what's going on here? Like, holy cow. And why do they put triangles on people's arms? Like Jim sent me and was upset. He says, why? Why do they put triangles? You know, why do they injure my wife and me? And I remember there was a guy here, his name is James, and he's with a famous blue orb. He gets healed of cancer, this blue orb, and he films this thing going into his body. And at one point, he has a cut in the top of his head. They cut this Y in the top of his head, and he's really mad, and a cut up into his groin. And he said, why would they do this to me? And I go, well, Jim, maybe they were trying to get your attention and you didn't pay attention. So they said, let's give him something that he can't deny. So when they put a triangle on somebody's arm, what are they doing? They want you to go. It's like you have this dream. And so Andy wakes up and he goes, oh, that was a dream. That was the weirdest dream. I was on this ship and stuff like that. That was the weirdest dream. And you look at your arm and go, oh my God, there's a triangle on my arm. That was real. That actually happened. That's what they're doing. They're doing this weird stuff where they're dragging people down the rabbit hole and people can't get out. And then they say the grade two class says, well, let's do cattle mutilations downwind and downstream from all nuclear power activities to give them the message. And then the other class says, well, let's do abductions. And then the other class says, let's do crop circles. All crop circles are different. What are they doing with crop circles? They just want you to, want to go, that's a hoax, it's not a hoax. Everybody goes, whatever it is, like, how the heck did you do that? And they just, this awe and curiosity, because there is no scientific investigation until there's awe and curiosity. As Gary Nolan says, I'm not interested in 95% of the stuff that falls within the bell curve. I'm interested in the 5% of the stuff that's outside the bell curve. That's where the Nobel Prizes are. It's the things that don't make sense that encourage you to do research, and that's when you discover new things. As long as you've got it all figured out and all explained, you're not going to do any research. You're just going to sit there and the ego is going to say, oh God, I'm so smart. I got this all figured out. That's what they're doing. They're doing this awe and curiosity thing where they're never going to disclose that. That's not part of the thing, because when you die, you're going to get all the answers to what's going on. But while you're here, they want you to work and they want you to all work together. That's why we came in. And so it really doesn't matter what the government's doing. It doesn't matter the mother-in-law, the dog ate the homework, whatever. Because when you leave the world, they say, Andy, how did it work out? And you can't say Hillary Clinton, the dog ate the homework, the mother-in-law, the Illuminati, the deep state. They're going to go, time out, time out, time out. This is not about anybody else. This is about you. You planned to come into the world to do this. How did it work out? How did it work? And everybody says the same thing, according to Michael Newton, 7,000 people. I could have done better. I forgot to do this. I was gonna do this, but I chickened out and stuff like that. And we came in to do something. So all we have to worry about in the world is we came into the world to do something. When we leave, you're going to get asked the question, how did it work out? You wanted to work on love, envy, whatever your lesson was. And did you do that? And that's all we got to do is worry about is what did I come into the world to do? And doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. It's totally irrelevant. It's what I came into the world to do. And the idea that we have made agreements, that you and I may have had an agreement before we were born. You're going to have a podcast. I'm going to come on and talk like a mile a minute. We're going to talk and we're going to try to raise the consciousness of the world, because that's what's happening. The more we have podcasts, the more nobody decides anything, but it's like everything else. You get to when I ask people, when did gay marriage become acceptable? And people go, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I really don't know. It's just the consciousness rises, and eventually it flips and everybody makes the right decision. So the more we talk about it, the more the consciousness rises and the dead people, all the skeptics die off and the new generation is listening to the conversation and it's acceptable to them. And consciousness moves, but it's going to move slowly. They want it to move along. It's all about this revelation of the fact not only is there some other intelligence, but the fact that it's not a physical world that's made out of consciousness, that there's no beginning, there's no end. We are God. We are all part of the one. All these other woo-woo things that nobody really wants to talk about. That's what they're trying to get us to understand. Because you talk to the people, the number one thing, 54% of all people in the experiences, according to the free survey, were talked to about oneness and love. I will absolutely maintain the number one message is oneness. We are all one. What you separate from the divine and put into darkness will drag you into the darkness with it. What you damn, damns you back. What you bless, blesses you in return. It's this whole idea. It's all divine. It's all this stuff. And we're part of this play. We agreed to come in here to play this play because you were King Henry VIII in grade 12 high school does not mean you are now King Henry VIII. You are not King Henry VIII. You are not Andy. I am not Grant. We are playing a role. Remember who you actually are, which was, I was told in one very dramatic experience I had. They said, don't you remember who you actually are? That's the key message. It's all etheric. It's all this ooey stuff. It's all made out of consciousness. And we have a low vibrating physical world and all this other vibrating. And these beings are just at a different vibrational level. It's like us being at the bottom of the ocean. We're in the dark. And suddenly somebody learns to vibrate higher. They have a meditation or they have a near-death experience or whatever. And they float higher into the water and they get closer to the light and they see, oh, there's fish. And they go back and say, man, I saw these fish, man. And then they go, you're crazy. There's no fish. It's dark. And you get higher up into the light. And then you realize that it's all just water. So people will say there's different dimensions. Like you asked the thing, is there dimensions? There's no dimensions. The Tao that can be named is not the Tao. The Tao is a verb. It's alive. It's conscious. Once you go into science, you put into things into nouns. So what we do is we're floating up into the water and we see these fish and we go to the fish. Hey, what level am I on? And the fish says, what do you mean? You crazy? You're not on a level. You're in the water, you idiot. There's no levels. And it's the same thing with consciousness. It's like water. You move higher and higher into these higher vibrating frequencies of consciousness and different things are there and you experience it. So you do the DMT, you get one type of experience, the psilocybin, you do another kind of experience, 5-methoxy-DMT, you're going into different levels and you're having these experiences, coming back into the world and talking to people who have not had those experiences. So it's all in the field, it's all one, and it's the ability to shut down that left rational analytical brain, go into the field, get the answers and bring it back. And I think that's where we're starting to learn. This is actually how it works in terms of the fact that there's no levels, there's no ETs. That you hear it more and more all the time. We've always been here. And this is the thing, what are they talking about? Or when they say to the person, where are you from? And the being says, you wouldn't understand. Well, if you're from Mars or Venus, what's not to understand? They're saying you wouldn't understand. It's way more complex than just ETs. We want to believe this physical nuts and bolts world that they found some way to come through a portal or whatever. No, it's the whole idea is we're misinterpreting what's actually going on here. And but it eventually we're going to get it. We've learned when I started, it was simple ETs. No doubt about it. I saw that thing and it was like, oh, that's got to be an ET. I don't believe anything I believed in 1975. Nothing that I believed in 1975.
So do you not think there's any element of this that could be ETs coming from somewhere else?
Well, okay, but it, say a dream. When you're in a dream, Andy, is there time and space? Yeah, there's time and space. But no, there's no time and space in a dream. It's like, or if you go into a DMT experiment, or there's a book that's just been written on comas, I would highly recommend, or if you can interview this guy, written on comas, where people go into comas and you think, oh, they're just, their brain is shut off and they're silent. You talk to people, I've got two people who are in comas, deep induced comas, unbelievable. The person said, I was gone 100,000 years. So was he gone 100,000 years? The one woman said, and the way they describe it in the comas is worse than near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. They say, this was not a dream. This was not an hallucination. This actually happened to me. I was gone for 80 years. I was raped every single night. I was killed every single night. It happened to me. It was not a dream. And people will say this. I was gone 100,000 years. Or in the DMT, the guy comes out and he says, how long was I gone? And the guy said, 10 minutes. 1,000 years in 10 minutes. So you go to the out-of-body experience or near-death experience. You know about this kind of stuff. You have the near-death experience. So you float out of your body and you look back down at Andy and you say, is the consciousness in the brain? No, the consciousness is right here. I'm floating around the room here. So then you look and you say, the brain, the body is inside the consciousness. I'm looking at it. It's inside the consciousness. Then you can float to the window and look at these stars and planets that everybody thinks they're coming from and say, hey, the stars and the planets are inside my consciousness. And when the beings, when you see the people who are flying the ship, there was a number of them where the being said, they said, where would you like to go? Ron Johnson says, I'd like to see the Milky Way from a distance. They said, okay, Ron, now listen carefully. They said, listen carefully, Ron. It is within you. Go within yourself. When you can imagine it, we will go there. And the whole thing is it out there or is it inside yourself? When you have a near-death experience, are you going outside your body or are you going inside your body? When you have an out-of-body experience, near-death experience, and the whole thing when you're doing remote viewing, is the person going out? When Ingo Swann does Jupiter, is he flying to Jupiter? When you do the remote viewing, you give him the target, 453709. The person says, okay, I'm there. He doesn't say, hang on, I'm floating there. I'll be there in a minute. Is there such a thing as time and space? We're starting to realize there may not be time and space with the spooky action at distance. So if there's no time and space, my question is, how many galaxies can you put on the head of a pin? It's all here. It's all now. It's all within ourselves. It's all just ULI. Or the idea where the idea there's only one electron. Or Paul Selleck, who's the experience or the channeler, who says there is only one note being played in the universe at different octaves, only one note, or the one electron. We're starting to realize it may be all here and now. There is no time, there is no space. And so the question is, what's actually happening? It's this thing of consciousness. It may just be a singularity in time and here, and there is no time and space. Before we'd say it's crazy, there's no time and space. Now you can get guys like Donald Hoffman, Dr. Donald Hoffman, who said the idea of time space is dead. Starting to be explained now in scientific explanations, scientists starting to explain this. So the woo-woo world that you say, don't bring up the woo-woo, don't bring up the spiritual stuff, that is being actually now discussed in quantum physics and this whole thing, is it may not be the world you think it is. It may just be a world of this singularity of consciousness that we can create these things in our mind, but it's all still creations within our mind that we are creating. This idea of time and space is basically in trouble.
I'll just say I spent 10 hours on a minibus yesterday from Newcastle to Birmingham and back, and it certainly felt like there was time, or the amount of time I sat in a very uncomfortable minibus.
Okay, but if you have a dream of being on a minibus for 10 hours, were you on the minibus for 10 hours?
Well, no, I can appreciate that because I lucid dream quite a lot. So when I'm in a dream, I can feel touch, all that kind of stuff, and I get that whole concept. I can wake up from a dream pretty tired, to be honest.
Or I talked to Chris Bledsoe. I confirmed with him. I said, Chris, when you got abducted, you were gone for 4 hours. He said, yeah, and then he confirms, but it was 4 months. I was gone for 4 months. I was gone 4 hours on physical time, but I was gone for 4 months. And I said, was there an engine? Because this is one of the things that Lakatsky says. We're into this nuts and bolts, and we're going to get the engine, and we're going to get high power, and we're going to have free energy and all this kind of stuff. And I said to Chris, hey, Chris, was there an engine? Because I knew what he was going to say. And he said, well, I was on this. They took me on this tour for 4 months, and it was in this thing, and it was like glass, but you couldn't see it. You could touch it, and you're in this thing. And he said, Grant, I have never seen an engine. And what did Lakatsky say? When we were inside the craft, he said there was no engine. And then he said the thing that I'm saying, so what are we dealing with if there's no engine? And Betty Andreasen said they took her on this glass thing to meet the one, to meet the like God, the one behind the glass. And the aliens couldn't go there. They couldn't get close. She had to walk the last couple of feet to the glass door and go to the one. And she said they took her on this glass orb where she was being moved around. And she said there was just a bench in there. And she was in the bench and she's looking around the crowd like, where's the engine? She said there was no engine. And that's the thing you're starting to see is I would say, and I asked George Knapp and he didn't answer. I said, George, you had Bob Lazar. So we assume there's these nuts and bolts things. I said, 115. Everybody knows the 115 story about 115. I said, George, did you ever have anybody else tell the story that there was 115 being used to propel the craft? And then I said, the nine UFOs that he saw, were they all different? Yeah. And so I'm starting to look at all the crafts are different. All the propulsion systems are different. There's no two propulsions. All the grays are different, which I'm going to show in this lecture. I go, all these grays, and they're all, they don't look the same. All leaves on a tree are different. All snowflakes are different. The rule is it's all different. Or even the Colm Kelleher tells a story, which throws everything of the nuts and bolts out. The object is coming. There's six guys on Skinwalker Ranch with Gen 3 glasses. The object comes over the ridge, flies right by them. They all go, and they watch this thing. End of the night, they make their notes, and everybody saw something different, which is what Kid Green said when he said, the beings, when you see a being, there could be two people in the same experience. They see two different beings, which is what happened when I did the experience with the Mission Rama, who have no grays, no reptilians, no mantids. They have these beings that are like out of the Bible. And there's 2014, they're in the Zendra. I interviewed those people inside the Zendra, 2015. And one of the people in the 2015 Zendra is a Navy guy, 24 years in the Navy, now an architect in Los Angeles, didn't want his name identified. He was a translator for Paula Harris in there. And I'm interviewing the people, 2014. It was these tall beings, 10 feet tall, solid, physical. And then 2018, they described the same, 2015, but everybody had a different experience. They were all experiencing some message, different message coming from the being. And that, so I interviewing the Navy guy, and I said, hey, so you were inside? He said, yeah, I can't believe it, Grant. There was an extraterrestrial in there. I could not believe it. I'd never had a sighting. It was an extraterrestrial. I said, oh, so it was a hologram. Because the other people said it was a hologram. The first year, it wasn't a hologram. The second year, the same being was floating there, but you could see the trees be through it. And he said, hologram? What are you talking about? I said, yeah, it was a hologram. No, it wasn't. I said, well, I talked to everybody else in the Zendra, and they said the first year it was a solid being, second year it was a hologram. He said, look, Grant, I was close enough to see the lines in the face. It was not a hologram. It was an extraterrestrial. And I go, okay, whatever. And that's the thing. You see, the beings are changing from same as Chris Bledsoe. Changed, and my Nancy Tremaine, the beings change, and you see this thing's very plastic. It's very pliable. We want to make it solid nuts and bolts. That you're looking for a pattern. There is no pattern. All UFOs are different. All aliens are different. This is what's going to be the pattern. It's falling apart. The idea of trying to see how many green ones, and we can figure out what the green ones. That's where I read this thing before. Because we cannot control the phenomena, we watch those who the phenomena affects. Those are the ones you got to watch. The ones that are indirect. Lights in the sky produce no usable information because you can count how many green ones, red ones. It doesn't tell you anything. You got to talk to the people who are actually interacting with whatever this intelligence, I call it the intelligence, whatever this intelligence is, you got to talk to the people who are talking to the intelligence, and the rest of it is not very useful.
Teresa and Kerry both sent in questions, but you've answered those, Grant, in the last couple of things you've said. So thank you for those questions, ladies. Dave Smethurst, for the final listener questions, he's got two. The first one is, how does Grant judge if the people I have seen him interviewing claiming to channel NHI are genuine or fake? Do you believe them all, or are there certain common factors that emerge with the people you believe to be genuine?
There's absolutely a fact. I've got a $1,000 bet. Anybody that thinks that they can channel and fool me, I got $1,000. I put on the table. You put your $1,000 on the table. I will take your money. There is a very direct pattern. I don't want to say what the pattern is. I'll tell the people after they think they can channel, there's absolute clear evidence that people are channeling. I'll give you one. Paul Selleck is one of the best channelers out there. Paul Selleck is, he whispers, repeats. He's done 12 books. In each of those books, there has not been more than two edits in the book. So when you were transcribing this interview and you put it on YouTube, what you'll see is Grant says, none of that happens to the channeler. It's pure. There's no ands. There's no hesitations. There's nothing. There's a number of things that a channeler will present where I can look at the record and say, if it's a channeler, it's going to produce this kind of brain pattern. This is going to happen. Absolutely. There's a clear pattern to somebody who's channeling and somebody who's not channeling. Absolutely.
So there are people that you've spoken to that you would not believe?
Well, I don't know if... there's people that that I'm not sure that, I mean, I'd have to look at, there's a couple that I've studied very carefully where I look at these various patterns, like Bashar, when you look at the brain pattern, and it's the same as long-term meditators. They produce the same high rate gamma signal that long-term meditators will produce, where they're sort of in the zone. If you can produce that or repeat and stuff like that. So there's some where, you know, there's so many channelers now. When I first started, there was really none. There was, you know, Seth, and there was Bashar came in the 80s and stuff like that. But the one I wanted to do, and I'm looking very importantly, and I probably mentioned this before, so excuse me if I mentioned this before, but the one pattern I wanted to do that would nail the thing down and destroy the world of physical idea is I want to do one with trans channelers. So a trans channeler is somebody who's not relay. What's called a relay channeler is somebody who's relaying, I see this symbol and I think it means this, and they're trying to tell me this. Do you have a cat? Who's your name? You know, that kind of stuff. It's called a relay channeler. A trans channeler is somebody who doesn't remember anything. The other thing about a trans channeler, like Paul Selleck. Paul Selleck says, when I channel, people say that my eyes change color. That's DNA. The DNA is changing. So why is the DNA changing? And this is the whole thing. I want to run this trans channel experiment where I take channelers, and I did one, and she turned out not to be. She was whatever. She turned out not to be. I didn't think she was, but she wanted to do the test. So you do the DNA when they're normal. Then you'd take the DNA, not after they've channeled, while they're channeling. And Bashar had agreed to do this. So the one that was done was Jay-Z Knight. Now everybody says, oh, Jay-Z Knight made it up. She's full of crap, you know, whatever. So, well, maybe she didn't make it up. So she did, and Ramtha was her being that she channeled. And Ramtha said, DNA is consciousness. And if you take it when you're channeling, it will change. So they did this experiment. She took her DNA. She was, I think, French female. When they did she channeled, she had three different swabs taken. They went to three different labs and it showed male, Icelandic or something like that. The DNA completely changed. So everybody said, I've got the actual DNA samples from one to the other. And everybody said, well, she made it up. I said, well, maybe she made it up. Well, why don't we do it again? We got some trans channelers who can do it. Bashar had agreed to do it. There's a woman who's a spirit painter out of London had agreed to do it. And if we get a second one, and this is what it comes down. I said, there's a Nobel Prize. Once we get the second one of a trans person whose eye color changes, or a person with multiple personality disorder, you'll see this multiple personality disorder where the person says, I had a disease. The alter didn't have a disease. One has glasses. One doesn't have glasses. The eye color changes. One can speak a language. One can't speak a language. It's that same thing. When the control of the body is taken over by another spirit, I maintain the DNA will change. And it's just a matter of me getting that one confirming thing. And then you can go back and reproduce it. You can say, oh, I don't believe it. Go back and reproduce the experiment. It will reproduce every time. And everything goes out the window. If the DNA changes, when the consciousness changes, when there's a trance, not a relay channeler, but when the being takes over the body and the voice changes, the color, the eye color changes, the facial expression changes, all that kind of stuff, it's game over. Because then consciousness, then you got to go like, what is going on? The DNA is not. And I remember I had a top DNA guy said, no, Grant, that's not how DNA works. I said, I know how you're going to tell me DNA works. Let's just do the experiment. Forget about the old theories. But if it's wrong, I'll say, no, I was wrong. That's not the way it works. If I get a trans channel, but if the DNA is, for example, like one of the, what's his name? Buchanan, Lynn Buchanan. When he did remote viewing, he talks about this. They told him, he's the guy that did the mind meld with Saddam Hussein. He said, when, and he doesn't even know this, same as Paul Selleck doesn't know about the green, his eyes changing color, why that's changing color. Buchanan said, when he did the experiment, when he was mind melding with Saddam Hussein, his eyes changed from blue to brown. That's DNA changing. When you have that encounter, that changes the whole world. That's this whole thing that consciousness is primary and that DNA is not this physical thing we think it is. It's almost like Tim Taylor called it the antenna. Hair and the DNA are the antennas that allow us to make these contacts. That's how it's working. So there's absolute patterns that can be shown. But what you need is trans channelers, pure trans channelers, not relay channelers.
Final question from Dave Smethurst. Does Grant think Ron Pandolfi of the CIA is a disinformation agent seeking to steer the community away from the real truth behind UAP? If so, what's Ron trying to hide? If not, what does Ron think explains the phenomenon?
I think I've become famous for this expression. The biggest question in ufology is not what are UFOs? The question is, what the hell is Ron Pandolfi doing? I have followed this guy for 20 years, 25 years. I think he calls it obfuscation. There's actually a guy, his name is, Doug Ault. He's an artist, a realist artist, who wrote a Hollywood or a Broadway play on UFOs. And he's got me in there, and he's got Ron Pandolfi. He's good friends with Ron Pandolfi. And he sings a song called Obfuscation. So the obfuscation is the disinformation thing. In this latest version of the government coming in and saying we want to release these documents or whatever, the document in it had a thing which the guy was reading it. I was watching on a Zoom as this guy was reading it, and he said, the ambassador is talking about the ambassador. And I go, holy cow, Ron Pandolfi's involved in this, because the ambassador was Doug Ault. Doug Ault had gone with Ron Pandolfi to a facility, and he was signing in. There was guards there and stuff like that, and he was signing in. And he said to Ron, "What do I sign in?" He said, "Yeah, sign in as the ambassador." So when this government document leaks and it's got the ambassador, and I go, "There's only one. There's only me and Doug Ault and Ron Pandolfi know what the ambassador is. Like, Ron's involved in this sort of thing." It's the same thing that I say. He's doing disclosure and he's doing obfuscation at the same time. He's telling the story, but he's telling it with all these weird sort of stories where you don't know whether to believe him or not believe him. That's why I say the biggest question is, what's he really doing? So you'll see stuff where he's keeps indicating that the portal is real. And his wife came through this portal, that she's extraterrestrial. Even a daughter at 6 years old said, I'm only half extraterrestrial. I'm only half alien. My mother's a full alien. And this kid's 6 years old. She's like, where's she getting this? She's getting it from her parents. And so I followed it. And at one point I said, I follow people around Ron. I have a little bit of contact with Ron, but I don't really engage. I have this idea. I stay a couple steps removed from my victim. So I always stay removed, and I talk to people around him. And so at one point I'm looking at Ron, and I'm trying to get this. And I said to the guy, I said, I don't know. I'm getting frustrated with this. It's like the disclosure stuff just drives me nuts. I just can't take it anymore. I gotta get a break. And then I go, I don't know. I don't know. Other than the portal thing, he had this one disclosure where I caught him on camera where he said, people have always wondered what it's like to go in the next world. The next time John, his friend, is sitting beside him, next time John goes to the desert, a number of us here will go in the next world and come back again. I went, wow, this is for real. There's actually portal stuff. They've actually got this. They've got some sort of technology, because he didn't realize this is going to get loose. I mean, I got it off his wife's YouTube channel. And so I said to this other guy, I said, I don't know. I'm frustrated with this stuff. I can't take it. I said, the portal stuff, I'm interested, but it's just nuts. I said, do you think I should stick around? He goes, and there's this hesitation. He goes, yeah, I should probably stick around. I go, okay, I'll stick around. I'll just keep following her on and stuff like that. So a couple of years later, we're talking about hockey. We're not even talking UFOs. He said, remember that question you asked me a couple of years ago? And I said, yeah. He said, it's real. I said, it is. It's like, it is. So yeah, there's truth. He's telling truth, but again, you got to sandwich it with this disinformation stuff. So he's doing both. He's revealing stuff that's going on, and at the same time, he's covering up. So you don't know what it is, because once you know what it is, you spill the milk and you can't put the milk back in the jar. So that's what they're doing. They're releasing the story in a form of disinformation. They got it, so nobody really knows what's true and what's false. And as they go along, the story is being built as to what's going on. They're acclimatizing people. That's what I believe is going on. And that's what I think Ron's role is. He's supposedly the guy that briefs the president. And he'll always say everything that I pick up. He says, oh, Grant's just repeating what Dan Smith says. So he's always got plausible deniabilities. Never him. Except for that one, I got him on camera. Then he can't deny that. But everything else, oh, he's just repeating what Dan Smith is saying. He's repeating what the Scientology people are saying and stuff like that. And it never has anything to do with him. He's plausible deniability. I never said that. That was Dan Smith said that. So It always has an out, and same as these other documents, this latest version of what they're doing, it's the same thing. They've got an out. The guy said, is this a classified document? I said, it's never going to be a classified document. They're always going to alter the document. They're going to come in. They can't do that. They're going to do this half true, half false thing. You're going to put it out because you're a film guy. The government doesn't have film guys, so they've got to contract this out. You're a contractor. They want you to put it out. You're never going to be able to prove it, but it's going to tell a few little secrets to the people, and nobody can confirm it. And that's how they're putting the story out, with this half true, half false type stuff. And Mellon says, no, that's not true. It is true, because Tom DeLonge was talking to officials who were operational. It's one thing if you say, I'm talking to Jim Semivan, he's retired. I'm talking to Ron Pandolf, he's retired. I'm talking to whoever retired. But if you're in the government and you're talking to them, that's coming from the government. There's no way these guys would be talking to Tom DeLonge unless they had permission to talk to Tom DeLonge.
Listen, folks, Grant's been with me for nearly 2 hours, 20 minutes now. If you're on any of the paid feeds, you're going to hear another couple of questions for 10 more minutes of Grant's time as a thank you to those who pay for the podcast, a little bit of speculation. Otherwise, I'll say thank you now to Grant for his time. Grant, how can folks get hold of copies of the books and also see your own material as well?
Okay. The book I recommend, you don't really need to read it. It's just, I've told you basically what's in the book. I just so frustrated with the disclosure stuff, but the books are on Amazon. I've written 21 books. I got 4 coming out that are done, but I used to have the President's UFO website. I shut that down because I got stuck with it. I had a very complex website, and then the guy quit, and then I didn't know what to do with it. So I shut that down. I've got a blog, White House UFO blog. If you go to that, I put some stuff down there. I'm on Twitter. I post everything on Twitter and Facebook. My Twitter is Grant Cameron. My Facebook is Presidential UFO, where I put my material, and I do lots of podcasts. But the blog site would be one. The books, the one that's coming out, the book I would recommend people, when the book called the big Game comes out, that'll be an important book. That is where I link all the paranormal phenomena together. There was so much material, I had to actually turn it into 2 books. So I go through ghosts, I go through Ouija boards, I go through everything, and I show you how this is all connected. It's basically all the same thing. And I think that's extremely important. It's sort of what I actually think is going on. The disclosure stuff is just sort of the stuff that interests people, because they're interested in, you know, the government and the cover-up and scandals and all this kind of stuff. That you can get on Amazon. But the big book that'll be coming is called the Big Game. It'll be book 1 and 2, which I think is very important. Same as my book called Inspired is a very important one. That's where I look at all the inventions. I look at music, where music comes from, where poetry comes from, this idea that everything's in the field, and you go in the field. And my Tuned In book, where I look at the paranormal world of music, that's all the I think the important stuff is the concept of the fact that there's much more beyond the physical world than we realize. And it's like God talks to everybody, but only certain people are listening. Everything is there. And there are certain people who are psychic, who have abilities, who are able to shut the left brain down, and they're able to go in the field, and they're able to get it. And that includes abductees. It's like, why does an alien come to you and go, Andy, wake up, wake up. Why do they do that? And you wake up and you go, oh God, it's an alien. You disassociate. That's what they're doing. They're making you disassociate. They're using trauma. Trauma is one of the things that gets you in the field. You disassociate and you go into the field. Same as most psychics are, they have this childhood abuse issue thing where they're disassociating. And that's what basically the world that I see is, we have our level of the world, and then we have all these levels of the world that if you can dissociate through hypnosis, regression, psychedelics, trauma, near-death experience, whatever, you can dissociate, move into the field, you will be able to get some answers and bring them back. And that's the important people to talk to, is people who have been in the field and have got the information, because what you see is you see this oneness message, the love message, you see all these repeating messages over and over again. They're all saying the same thing. And people say, channelers are all saying this the same thing. And it's like, did you get hit in the head with a windmill? Come on. You read enough channel material, it's the same thing over and over and over. They're all saying exactly the same thing. They're saying exactly what the UFO experiencers are saying. It's this oneness message. We're all one thing. It's all We're all connected. It's all, everything's made out of consciousness. We're creating the world with consciousness, and it's getting more elaborate and more dramatic. And the veil is thinning. There's more and more people who are coming into the world who are able to get in the field and bring this material down, and consciousness is rising. And eventually we're all going to come to the right conclusion, and we're going to realize the world was not flat. The world, sun did not go around the earth. There was more than one galaxy. We are not stationary in space. We've lived on our five impressions of seeing is believing, and we've come to realize that's wrong. And I think in the end, we're going to realize everything you see, everything you perceive is going to be wrong. It's that far removed from what we have. Things aren't solid, and just goes on and on and on and on. And we eventually learn this, and the world's not flat, the sun doesn't go around the earth. We're just learning, and as we go along, this is just new lessons that they are teaching us. That the paranormal is simple. If the paranormal is real, then there's something outside the world that we've got wrong. That's what the paranormal is telling us. There's something you've got that's wrong. Otherwise, the paranormal would not be happening. If it was just a nuts and bolts world, random biological robots in a meaningless universe, paranormal wouldn't be happening. The paranormal is happening, which means you got something wrong. Time to start exploring, get the awe and curiosity, and explore and learn something new about the universe.
Well, listen, folks, if you are finishing up with us here on any of the free feeds, thank you very much, and thank you to Grant. Otherwise, if you're on any of the paid feeds, stick around just for 10 more minutes. I appreciate Grant's time, and I'll speak to you all very, very soon. That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't